It is Friday, May 11th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Israel prepares to celebrate its 70th anniversary.
The sense of many Israelis is that they live in a country that has been succeeded in many respects, though confronting a lot of difficulties.
Italian police break up terror financing rings, and we visit the U.S.-Mexican border region to hear what residents there say about immigration. It's all ahead. On Monday, May 14th, Israel marks 70 years since it was established as a state in 1948. A torch-lighting ceremony is expected to begin Independence Day celebrations that will include dancing, concerts, and fireworks. It's also expected to be the day the United States officially opens its relocated embassy in Jerusalem. Carved out of Palestinian territory following World War II and at the end of the British Mandate, it has become home to the Jewish diaspora and has become an economic success story rivaling Western Europe. But its people, surrounded by Arab states, face a host of security challenges. Joseph Olmert, a political science professor at the University of South Carolina, spoke with International Edition's Victor Beatty and called the Jewish state one of the world's great success stories of the past seven decades.
Because from a state that was engaging in a war for its own existence, it became a regional superpower with an economy which is stronger than many economies in the world. You know that the per capita income in Israel is higher than that of Britain and France, with great educational and health systems, a strong army. Altogether, it's a great place. Almost 9 million people living there, as opposed to about 650,000 in 1948. Altogether, the sense of many Israelis is that they live in a country that has been succeeded in many respects, though confronting a lot of difficulties, a lot of challenges, but still a country which is so exceptional in the overall neighborhood of the Middle East, you know, where instability and civil wars and violence are the order of the day.
Of course, Israel faces a number of security challenges. Is Iran the biggest threat?
It may be the biggest threat now, and as we talk, by the way, there may be some interesting developments along the border between Israel and Syria involving Iranian provocations against Israel, but altogether, the Iranian threat, as big as it is, it's a temporary one because it's not so clear to me why the Iranian people would, for too long, accept a regime that engages itself in conflicts all over the Middle East as opposed to dealing with the problems of Iran. So I would expect changes in Iran itself. I think that the real problem that Israel is confronting is the idea that there should be some kind of peaceful accommodation between Israel and the Palestinians.
Prime Minister Netanyahu is welcoming what he calls the real seeds of peace that he said were beginning to sprout among some of Israel's Arab neighbors. Do you agree with that?
Well, yeah, you know, when you hear today the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the way he talks about the Arab-Israeli conflict, it's like heaven and earth. It's a huge difference from what it used to be. And it's Saudi Arabia, you know, the country where the holy places of Islam are in Mecca and Medina. And Saudi Arabia, with all its economic prowess and might and all that, there is peace with Egypt. One thing is to talk about that. Another thing is to expect formal, say, peace treaties between Israel and more Arab countries on top of the ones that Israel has with Jordan and Egypt. That is something to be desired. It's not going to happen in the immediate future.
Paraguay has announced it's becoming the third country to move its embassy to Jerusalem. How significant is that?
Part of the process. There's no question that the decision of President Trump to move the embassy of the U.S. to Jerusalem, which is Israel's capital, is opening the doors for more countries to do so. The Czech Republic is opening a consulate in Jerusalem, and they say it's the beginning of a process that would lead them to move the embassy. Romania is considering it, and we know about other countries in Central and South America and perhaps in Africa. The gates were open, you know, and it's not a flood, but it's the beginning of a process.
Of course, the dispute with the Palestinians remains, as Joseph Olmert said, the number one challenge for Israel. He doesn't see any breakthrough in the near term, but he remains hopeful. He said ending hostilities must also be the number one challenge among Palestinians who, he added, remain divided over how to deal with Israel. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Doug Bernard. So, Doug, what's trending?
Well, hello, Sarah. And what's trending today is fallout from an interview that White House Chief of Staff John Kelly gave to NPR, National Public Radio. Now, in that interview, it was a broad, extensive interview, but this is a direct quote from him. They were talking about people who are legally entering the United States. This is John Kelly's words. He says, "The vast majority of people that move illegally into the United States are not bad people. They're not criminals. They're not MS-13. Then he went on. "They're also not people that easily assimilate into the United States. They're overwhelmingly rural. Countries they come from, fourth, fifth, sixth grade educations are the norm. They don't speak English. They don't integrate well. They don't have skills." Well, that's really kind of set a lot of people's teeth on edge, I think, in no small measure because, as James Martin, who is with the Office of Communications with the Vatican, actually, also a priest, he says here, in response, "Every hateful, stereotypical, and racist thing John Kelly said about Mexican Americans was said about every other immigrant group that ended up building the country. This includes his," excuse me, "and my Irish ancestors." Of course, the Irish were not at all welcome. Joshua Zeitz, word for word, "This is in line with how nativists described John Kelly's Irish ancestors, who were overwhelmingly rural and thought to be ill-suited to the rhythms and disciplines of an urbanizing economy." Not everybody's in disagreement here. I think there's this one comment. Let me see if I can just race down to find it. Many people are unhappy. But here's somebody who identifies himself as a Twitter account, "The Gay Republican. I don't think John Kelly went far enough in saying the vast majority of illegal immigrants don't have skills. The vast majority of illegal immigrants bring no value to America, but do weigh down the system. He isn't being racist. We are truly getting the world's leftovers." So once again, a press interview given by a prominent member of the White House landing a whole bunch of people in some hot water.
All right. Thanks very much, Doug. That's social media editor Doug Bernard. Here are some of the top news stories that are trending. Pakistan cracks down on U.S. diplomats. The World Health Organization prepares for a worst-case scenario for a Democratic Republic of Congo Ebola outbreak. Malaysia's new prime minister may be ready to pardon the opposition leader, and Iran says Israeli attacks on Syria are based on invented pretexts. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The Oxford Dictionary defines the slang word cool as fashionably attractive or impressive. Being called cool is considered a compliment since so many people are hoping to give such an impression. One area where people try their hardest to look cool is in their photographs. According to University of Arizona professor Ghalib Warren, the idea of looking cool to many people has always meant looking detached, indifferent, or unemotional. But his new study suggests a nice smile could make the difference in how a person is perceived as looking cool. Warren's team showed volunteers two pictures of the same person, one smiling, the other not smiling. They found that those who didn't smile when their photo appeared less cool to the volunteers compared to when they did smile. So, if you want to look cool in your selfies, smile. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, President Trump's poll numbers are slowly rising, and recent developments concerning North Korea could be helping. Italian state and finance police announced they have broken up two alleged jihadist cells with a large anti-terrorism operation that led to a number of arrests. Police searches took place in around 20 properties in northern Italy and Sardinia. Interior Minister Marco Minniti hailed the operations, declaring that two hostile structures have been neutralized. Sabino Castelfranco has more for VOA from Rome.
Judges in northern Italy and Sardinia issued the arrest warrants for operations Foreign Fighters and Syriana. Officials said the two cells were based in Lombardy and Sardinia. They were believed to have ties to Islamic militants in Syria, namely the Al-Qaeda-linked Nusra Front. Investigators said they believed the two cells were autonomous, although one individual appeared to have had relations with both.
L'operazione ha avuto ad oggetto l'arresto.
At a press conference in Rome Thursday, Italy's chief terror prosecutor, Federico Cafiero de Rao, said 14 people were arrested in the operation, including 11 Syrians and 3 Moroccans. He said 4 of them are charged with association aimed at terrorism activities, and the others are charged with conspiracy to finance terrorism, in addition to crimes for abusive financial intermediation aimed at money laundering. All those arrested in Italy were legal immigrant residents in the country. Police added that they were able to track the laundering of about $2.4 million, some of which was sent to the Nusra Front. The prosecutor said the money was transferred largely using the informal network known as Hawala that is common in much of the Arabic world and evades the usual checks to monitor for terror financing. A number of European countries were being used for these transfers. The prosecutor added that the investigation had uncovered links between those financing terrorism and illegal immigration, but did not find evidence that migrant traffickers were bringing in foreign fighters. Swedish authorities collaborated with the Italians during their investigation, and police officials said their assistance was of fundamental importance. The arrest warrant said that the man considered the head of the organization was a Syrian, Anwar Dadua. He often worked in Sweden, where he is already in state custody. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Rome.
President Donald Trump is basking in the glow of his most notable foreign policy success to date, the return of three Americans who had long been detained by North Korea. Trump is hoping that a breakthrough in relations with North Korea could help his historically low poll ratings, which have actually crept upward in recent weeks. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
President Trump was on hand to greet the return of the Americans released by North Korea. A made-for-TV moment for a president looking to improve his political standing at home.
It was a very important thing to all of us to be able to get these three great people out.
Trump has long complained that he gets little credit for the strong U.S. economy, and he often lashes out at the news media for what he sees as its preoccupation with the Russia investigation led by Special Counsel Robert Mueller.
So we have the best employment numbers we've virtually ever had. And yet, all we hear about is this phony Russia witch hunt. That's all we hear about.
Trump followed through on another campaign promise this week when he pulled the U.S. out of the Iran nuclear deal, a move that drew criticism from Democrats like Senator Ben Cardin.
Withdrawing from the nuclear agreement isolates America. I think it helps Iran. And works against our objectives to control their type of activities.
God bless the USA.
Trump's poll numbers have improved slightly in recent weeks, but he still remains a polarizing figure, says analyst John Fortier.
I think for both sides, people who like Donald Trump and don't like Donald Trump, positions have hardened. And it's interesting to see that his approval ratings have not changed dramatically in the last several months, even though it seems like a lot has happened.
From the beginning of his presidency, Trump has spent a lot of time convincing his base supporters that he's following through on his election promises, says Henry Olson.
The more partisan you are, the more likely you are to be loyally behind Trump, the more likely you are to think that the Democratic Party is posing a threat for America. And consequently, when you feel that, then virtually any means are necessary to combat that threat.
But even with the president's slight improvement in the polls, Trump remains a motivating force for opposition Democrats, says Bill Galston.
President Trump's job approval remains near historic lows for a first-term president. And there are signs that Democrats at the grassroots are highly mobilized. Record numbers are showing up and presenting themselves as candidates for office.
Trump hopes to keep the focus on the domestic economy and North Korea, and away from the Russia probe, the legal problems facing his personal attorney Michael Cohen, and the legal battle over his alleged affair with porn star Stormy Daniels. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.
On the next edition of VOA's Press Conference USA, host Carol Castiel and VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone talk with William Galston, senior fellow in the Governance Studies Program at the Brookings Institution, about his latest book, Anti-Pluralism, The Populist Threat to Liberal Democracy. Be sure to listen to Press Conference USA this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is International Edition. Longtime residents along the U.S.-Mexico border in southern Arizona and California have seen walls rise and National Guard troops deployed. Though often portrayed as a black and white issue, human rights versus security, the border is a multifaceted subject to the people who live here. VOA's Ramon Taylor and Arturo Martinez report.
Agricultural workers from both sides of the border work hard here in San Luis, Arizona. For many of them and other locals, life on either side is indistinguishable. But in this quiet agricultural and manufacturing town, the Latino majority population views the border as complicated. Maria Herrera, a farm worker, mother, and permanent resident in Arizona, worries that drug trafficking is affecting the town's children, some as young as 12.
They don't have work. There's no work. There's nothing. And their best option a lot of times is to go the easy route, rob, use drugs, or carry drugs across the border.
The National Guard was recently deployed to the area to assist U.S. Border Patrol in monitoring illegal activity. But Herrera isn't convinced it will work. She worries about the effect of a militarized border on the undocumented.
Like all Latinos, we worry about what happens to other families like our own, because one way or another, many are family or relatives of some friend of ours that we have in common.
Other locals see less of a problem.
If it's for narco trafficking and trafficking of persons, then it's good. It's good to end that because it's dangerous for anyone here along the border, too.
They don't go in and attack nobody, I mean, just to protect the borders, and I agree.
127 kilometers away, across subtropical desert, the U.S. Border Patrol in the El Centro sector of Southern California seized more than 200 kilos of cocaine, 690 kilos of methamphetamine, and 70,000 grams of heroin in fiscal year 2017. Border Patrol Sector Supervisor Jorge Rivera is grateful for the National Guard and new replacement fencing.
Criminal organizations come over and they attack us with rocks. They throw any type of object towards us to avoid us apprehending any type of illegal activity.
Border residents in these two states share a lot of the same concerns. Chief among them is security. How they define it, though, largely depends on personal experience. In El Centro, Bill Dubois runs a shooting range for locals and Mexican tourists. He calls illegal immigration a danger.
You should know who comes into the country and why they're coming. How long will they stay here, and who are they? Those are things that every country needs to know about who comes across their borders.
The wall, go for it. National Guard, go for it.
Others want to protect their tax dollars.
They're leeching our system, and I pay so much taxes every month, believe me, that you know what pissed me off? That all my money goes to those people. You know what? I get nothing out of it.
Those who see the border a means to take a day trip for business, tourism, or visiting family Hope that won't change anytime soon. Ramon Taylor, VOA News, Calexico, California.
And that is our show. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. We have a range of stories that might be of interest to you, developing news as well as a number of features. I'm Sarah Williams. Thank you so much for joining us and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Each year on May 11th, the United States observes Vietnam Human Rights Day, a day to remember the importance of advancing fundamental freedoms, including freedom of expression, assembly, association, and religion. Vietnam remains an authoritarian state ruled by the Communist Party of Vietnam. The most recent National Assembly elections held in May 2016 were neither free nor fair. According to the State Department Human Rights Report, prison conditions were austere and occasionally life-threatening. Amnesty International and former prisoners of conscience noted that prison authorities singled out political prisoners and ethnic minority prisoners, particularly in the Central Highlands, for physical abuse, solitary confinement, and denial of medical treatment. In 2017, the government arrested over 30 individuals for peacefully expressing political or religious views, an increase from approximately 10 such arrests in 2016. The arrested included members of the pro-democracy group Brotherhood for Democracy, Viet Labor, bloggers, students, and individuals involved in expressing dissent related to the 2016 industrial spill by the Taiwanese-owned Formosa Ha Tin Steel Company. They include former political prisoner Pham Van Troy, who was arrested on July 30, 2017, reportedly based on his connections to the Brotherhood for Democracy. He was sentenced to 7 years in prison on April 5th. In February, authorities sentenced rights activist Huang Duc Binh to 14 years in prison for abusing democratic freedoms after posting online content about the government's response to the Formosa spill. During 2017, there continued to be credible reports that Vietnamese authorities pressured defense lawyers not to take religious or democracy activists as clients. Authorities also restricted, harassed, arrested, disbarred, and in some cases detained human rights attorneys who represented political activists. According to Human Rights Watch, more than 100 persons were in prison in Vietnam for political or religious reasons. Indeed, a Vietnamese court convicted International Woman of Courage awardee and human rights blogger Nguyen Ngoc Nhu Quyen, known as Mother Mushroom, to 10 years in prison after she gained a large social media following on her blog covering human rights, land issues, and environmental concerns. The United States calls on Vietnam to release all prisoners of conscience immediately and to allow all individuals in Vietnam to express their views freely and assemble peacefully without fear of retribution.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.